Okay, this is a long one. Hello, fellow brains wearing Hanes on trains, or reading Mark Twain's books on planes, or walking your Great Danes with canes, or changing lanes in Ford Fairlanes while your wife complains of labor pains. Where are the brains who will explain why cranes land on the plains of Maine? Do they? In the pouring rain in search of grain, while storm drains strain hard to contain water they obtain from steep terrain.
That was beautiful.
That was very slam poetry.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I like it, a snap clap for them. Yeah.
The bears of Berenstain.
They feel my pain.
Like a snap.
No, you need the bongos.
Welcome to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 159, and of course, I'm your humble host, Karen. And that was that beautiful slam poetry intro was written by listener Randy Johnson. Thank you so much. That was a whole story. I'm Karen, your humble host.
I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
And I'm Chris.
And this episode is brought to you by Audible. You know, you might not have time in your day to sit down and read a book or do any reading, but Audible houses over 150,000 audiobooks, books that you can listen to in the car, at home doing chores while you cook, you know, all multitask. I did not know this.
No.
But I just found out.
What?
So, if you, there's some books that are Kindle
not in English.
And Audible compatible.
My wife just discovered this. And so
she can not all choices.
And they talk to each other. So she can listen to a couple chapters, put it down, pick up the Kindle, it knows where she left off.
I don't know if I'd be able to do that.
No, why? It's great.
I don't know. I don't want to mix my listening and my reading.
Because, say if you're on the plane and you're reading something and then, you know, you have to go wait for your bags or something, you have to get out and you're like, oh, what happens? And you can pick up where you left off, vice versa.
It's like magic.
Yeah.
Wow.
It is. It's like, how do you know?
Yeah.
So, yes, you can switch from your ebook version, your Kindle version, to audiobook. And if you're going to check it out, you can totally get a free audiobook download at audiblepodcast.com/goodjobbrain.
I just listened to Modern Romance by Aziz Ansari, and he narrates.
Treat yourself!
Yeah. It's fascinating. He did a big sociological study about the state of modern romance and lots of stuff about internet dating and dating around the world, how it's changed over the last couple decades.
But it's so funny.
It's funny, and it's hilarious.
It's awesome. Is he narrating his own?
He narrates and puts in some little ad-libs and stuff.
That'd be weird if he didn't. I guess.
Yeah.
Well, as read by Bette Midler.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, they got Bette Midler.
You know what? Yeah. I think he would like that. Though.
He probably would. Yeah.
Novelty. Some big news.
No.
Oh.
Yes.
What?
We are having.
Oh, yeah.
Our first.
A baby.
Oh, no.
Wait.
We already did that.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Well, you did that.
Yeah.
We are finally doing a live show.
Finally.
Good job, Brain Live.
Can I go?
Yes. I think you're obligated.
Do I have a seat reserved?
So we had a couple of meetups, like in-person meetups in Vegas and in San Francisco.
And that went fine. No stabbings, you know?
No.
Right? Only one.
So only the... Yeah. But Colin's fine.
Yeah. I had it coming.
Yeah.
I don't even know how to describe it. It is a show. It's a Good Job Brain show live, but also we're going to have audience games. We're going to have Q&A, so it's a whole variety show, Good Job Brain style.
Yep.
It's going to happen on October 3rd on a Saturday in San Francisco, Japantown specifically, and the tickets are on sale now. We've been kind of...
Not telling anyone.
Yeah, well, we just kind of, you know, we told people on Facebook, and then we just wanted to see, but now it's official. I also needed to put down the deposit for the venue first, so I didn't want to be like, whoa, and
it's
then
for sure
like,
here.
Whoops, yeah.
We didn't get it.
So it's for sure happening October 3rd. You can get your tickets. Right now it's the early bird pricing, so it's $5 off, $25, and later it's going to be $30. 2 hours of awesomeness, and everybody's getting a cool goodie bag.
And this is daytime.
Daytime.
So, yeah.
Fun for the whole family. If you are interested, you can get tickets. There's a bit.ly link, which is faster. So bit.ly, bit.ly/GJB Live, lowercase, all one word. and get your tickets there. And of course, we're going to link it in the show notes too. So hope to see you guys there, and don't stab Colin
anymore.
All right, let's jump into our first general trivia segment. Pop quiz, hotshot, and here I have a random, not a Trivial Pursuit card. It is from the it's random from the box. It's called Forte, and it's really hard.
Okay.
Oh.
And I think it's hard because of...
Is it supposed to, it's like it's Trivial Pursuit, I think it's, but harder?
Yeah, I think it's supposed to be a little bit tougher than Trivial Pursuit, but also it's kind of dated.
And it's random categories?
It's, yeah, well, I can tell you what categories.
Okay.
It actually says here, so...
It looks it looks very much like a Trivial Pursuit card.
But like slightly less well laid out.
All right. Well, we can rock this. Like, we can do this, guys.
Must be for,
All right, well, here we go.
All right.
First question from the category of soaps.
Oh.
All right. Oh, okay.
Which Falcon Crest role is played by Chow Lee Chi?
Falcon Crest. So, wow, let's go back to the 80s.
No,
man. So all I think of is like Elizabeth... No, Joan Crawford, was she in there? Not Joan Crawford, what's her name?
Morgan Fairchild, right? Wasn't she?
Brian.
Which Falcon Crest role, is
character.
Played by Chow Lee Chi?
Chow Lee Chi?
I was barely allowed to watch that show.
I'm going to guess it's something very stereotypically Asian sounding.
So what are you going to say?
Well, you know, if you give me a profession. How about a profession?
Oh.
A doctor.
Incorrect.
Laundromat.
Incorrect.
Chef.
Close. The butler.
Oh, oh, okay. Okay.
Or manservant.
And what's the name of the role?
Or Chow Lee.
Oh, really? Yeah. What? Oh, so
they didn't come up with another name.
Yeah, they like, well,
they're just like Chow Lee the butler.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Oh, okay. All right.
All right. Next category, cartoons.
Mm-hmm. Here we go.
What was the title of the 1968 version of The Legend of King Arthur?
Oh.
Chris.
The Sword and the Stone?
Incorrect.
Gosh darn it.
Is this a kid in King Arthur's court?
Isn't that? No.
It's like one of them. It was like a variation action. One. Yeah. Hmm. 19.
Why it's a cartoon.
Okay.
The kid in King Arthur's court was a thing, but it was a live action
yeah.
movie.
Yeah.
Right. With Keira Knightley?
Kate Winslet.
Kate Winslet. Yeah.
Very was this, young.
Was this, in the 90s, I think, right?
It is.
Is it Robin?
What is it?
No.
Arthur and the Square Knights of the Round Table.
Never.
Do you get it now? It.
Yeah, no,
I don't remember that at all.
I don't think they played it again after 1968.
I don't know if it's a film or a
TV show.
TV show.
I don't know.
Anyways, okay, well, here we go. That's not your forte.
Okay.
No.
Okay, next category, space. Mm-hmm. What caused the lunar module, Snoopy, to be tossed around all over the skies on its test descent 9 miles from the moon?
What caused? Can you read it again?
What caused the lunar module Snoopy to be tossed around
all over the skies
in its test descent 9 miles from the moon?
I was going to guess like a tornado or something, but there's no weather on the moon. I don't know. I don't know what they're looking for.
A faulty switch setting on the instrument panel.
Oh, that was my second guess.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. I just didn't.
Just like something went wrong.
Right, yeah.
What caused it? Something went
wrong. The faulty.
Okay.
Faulty whatchamacallit on the doohickey. Yeah.
That's a really fun trivia question.
Yeah.
That's a really,
right.
Forte, the game, never said it was fun.
It's true. They didn't promise.
That's the slogan.
All right. Next category, pairs. Which married couple were the force behind the controversial film Bolero? Have you heard of the movie?
I've definitely heard of Bolero. And I remember that it was, I mean, at least at the time, minorly controversial.
For what?
But, I mean, just being racy, but I don't know who the couple was. I don't know.
John and Bo Derek.
Oh, okay. All right. That's right. So he was the director. That's right. She starred in it and he was married to him.
Sure. We're almost done with this card, guys.
All right.
This is weird.
Last category, fair play.
Mm. Okay.
It's very specific.
What would they know about that?
Yeah.
I ask you.
What was Indian spiritual leader Mohandas Gandhi's middle initial?
Oh, that
is a valid question.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fair play. I don't know what them. Okay. Colin.
J.
No. It's not Homer Simpson.
K.
No, no. K.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
I think I had that. Yes. Mohandas K.
Right. So I remember a long time ago, I believe it was in Walt Disney World, there was a film hosted by Walter Cronkite and Robin Williams. Mm-hmm. And Robin Williams kept on trying to pitch like characters, you know, and one of them was Mahatma Gandhi. So that was the first time I've even heard of the name. I always think, oh, they're like Gandhi. Oh, Mahatma Gandhi, who's like a mouse Gandhi. I don't know. Right. That's why I'm like, what's Mohandas?
Mohandas K. Gandhi.
Before we continue, we have a little bit of housekeeping here. We have an installment of... Karen, on our Epics episode, you had the quiz where we had to name as many characters from Epic franchises
as we could. I'm so happy people were taking pictures of their, you know, they're writing it down.
Oh, yeah. Really?
People were taking pictures and like, this is what I wrote, and then we crossed out the ones that...
We should do more of that type of quiz.
Yeah, I didn't know how that would be received, but turns out it was...
But like on the steering wheel of their car? Or... Sorry, it's a little jumpy.
So you had asked us to list as many... characters from the Game of Thrones novels as we could, or show, yeah. I suppose. Yeah. And so many people wrote in to correct. I
did not pick up on this when we were recording the episode.
I'm ashamed of myself, but this is
because I was listening to the episode too.
Oh, okay.
And you put as one of the characters Khal Drogo. Wait, is this not even it?
That's another
Let
one.
Let me tell you all about this. What I heard was you said Khal Drogo, and this was after you had given me crap over, like, R5-D4, and Khal Drogo, that is not his first name.
That's his title.
Yeah, it's his title.
Yeah,
it's not a first name, last name.
I'll defend a character that only has one name, though.
But I said R5-D4, and you said no.
But that's a robot. That's not a first name, last name.
Or Watto, who only has one name. And then you said Khal Drogo, okay. And it went by with...
Okay. Oh, I see how Khal is...
Because she's Khaleesi.
Because she's Khaleesi. Yeah. Right.
All right. Okay. So if we count Khal Drogo,
so
we should count
Watto.
So by Karen's
weird rules of it has to have two words. One is a first name, one is a last name.
All right.
He only has one name. Why? What did you...
So I had...
What was the other one?
This is such a great actually, okay. Because I was so ashamed of myself. I should have gotten this. You can understand why maybe I made the mistake. I said Myrcella Lannister.
Oh, no.
But in fact, is Myrcella Baratheon.
Oh, yeah. She is, of course.
As is Joffrey Baratheon and Tommen Baratheon. They are not Lannisters.
Right.
And I will say no more about that.
Can't believe we let that one go.
I feel like I'm in the spirit. It's in the spirit of I know what you
like. Wink,
mean.
Wink.
You know, you're absolutely right. But when you said it, it was like, oh yeah, you know, Myrcella Lannister.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah, it makes sense. But yes, well done to all the people who sent that one.
A lot.
Well, that's good. That's good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I love
had
it.
A lot of actually. I know. And Dana joked Hodor.
And that's actually his name is not Hodor.
No, it's not.
Walder. Yeah. That was a fun answer.
I was joking.
Yeah.
But I did take a point for it. I gave myself a point for it.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Yeah. I don't think
so. I'm keeping it. He reinvented himself as Hodor.
Luckily, nobody remembers who won, so.
That's right.
The points don't matter.
Right.
Oh, wow.
Oh, you're not keeping a running tally starting from episode one? I've got it in the other room.
I almost was going to make like an infographic. One time of like, oh, who got the most right or like percent. And I was like, I really don't want to go through all those episodes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Also, somebody's going to be upset at the end of that.
I will because I'd be the least, right? I would be the least.
Oh, yeah, because you participate in the fewest quizzes.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just like on average.
Yeah, I would
like,
imagine
what
that we would prorate it.
Yeah. Yeah. Points per minute of the show.
Well, that earlier geek off was actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Because, you know what, today's episode, we might get a lot of them actually.
Probably.
You know, or heated, passionate clarifications or more info.
Yeah. Are there enthusiastic fans of the thing we're going to talk about right now?
A few.
Is there a group of, yeah, okay.
Just a few, I think.
Do they enjoy correcting people?
Colin is like,
his lips got so tight. Like,
Let's jump into today's episode. Our topic is something we've had different segments about, but we never a whole dedicated topic. And it was actually, you know, suggested by listener Dan MacArthur, who's like, you know, I would really like to have an episode about Batman. And I was like, well, why not? Let's open it to comics in general. Mm-hmm. I love Batman. I personally love Batman. Yeah. But let's open up to all sorts of comics. Prepare yourself, everybody.
Yep.
So this week, we're going to talk about comics and comic books.
First comic books I ever remember getting was an issue of Spider-Man, and it was the debut appearance of Hydro-Man. Hydro-Man, and it for some reason
into water conservation.
He can turn himself into water, okay. Basically. And he ended up being a fairly long-lasting villain in Spider-Man.
That seems like that's a good power.
That was pretty good.
I mean,
you can freeze.
Right, you can imagine all the ways that vapor. You know the
you can
good guys
it,
have thought
you can
to
bust
beat him.
Out a lock by like you know filling
expanding.
It with water and
yeah.
then expanding it.
That's pretty
or
powerful.
It's pretty powerful.
You know somebody. Right. Yeah.
You can
slow down. I want to keep brainstorming this. Yeah. You could.
But how would you defeat him? A sponge? A fan?
A fan.
Yeah, he's been turned into vapor before. Yeah. Just that's one way to beat him. Yep. If you happen to chance upon Hydro-Man.
You could drink him.
You can mix some poison into the water.
Well, actually, you guys know Sandman. I think they've even had Sandman in the Spider-Man movies, right? Mm-hmm. At one point in the Spider-Man continuity, Hydro-Man and Sandman got merged together into Mudman.
Yes.
Mudman.
Yes.
How many was this a special like 6-issue sort of mini series?
It was a short run.
Intimate.
He was dumb
that
too.
Is,
it wasn't like he was like twice as smart. It was almost
he was half
like
as smart.
They, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. All of that to say, I've had a fascination with the villains in particular. And Karen, I know you and I have talked a lot about the good villains, the bad villains, the dumb villains. I'm a Marvel guy going all the way back. I'm not a big DC guy. So I put together a quiz about Marvel comics villains.
Okay.
So if you've read or seen Spider-Man, Daredevil, Fantastic Four, Incredible Hulk, this is the universe that we are talking about. Now, for this quiz, I will give you a description of a villain and their name. You tell me, is it a real villain from the Marvel comics, or is this a villain that I have made up to try and fool you?
So not like from another,
right?
Like not from DC
or
from anything.
I feel like we're all going to learn something.
Oh man,
during this quiz.
I've tried to choose some of the more obscure ones, but some of these have shown up more than once over the years.
Okay,
so
this is giving me flashbacks of Dana's Lifetime movie. Or fake.
Right.
Her fake ones are so good.
Yep. And the order of these has been entirely randomized, not by me, so you can't try and outsmart me he wouldn't put two of these back to back.
Wow.
Okay. The dice decided the order of this quiz. So here we go.
Oh. Yeah, but whose dice were they?
It was on the iPhone.
Technically it was a dice app. Yeah, that's how sad. That's how sad things are today.
We couldn't even find real dice.
It was app, yeah. all right, here we go. So why don't you guys give me a thumbs up for yes, this is a real villain from Marvel Comics, or a thumbs down, Colin, you are just BSing us.
Okay.
Stilt Man. Stilt Man is a scientist and inventor who developed a pair of super long telescoping legs, allowing him to rob tall buildings.
If you made it up, you did a great job.
Captures that time.
Yeah. It's like Inspector Gadget-y. Yeah. Right.
All three of you say real. Uh-huh. You are all correct.
Okay.
This is a real villain. He first fought Daredevil in 1965.
Yeah.
It's a simpler time, as you said.
Yeah.
Yep.
Moving right along.
Dumb enough to be true.
The Silver Platters. Spoiled rich kids Arthur and Eva Silver turn to a life of crime using metal throwing discs as their weapon of choice.
I'm gonna say
it's real. I hope you made it up.
I know. I love it so
it's
much.
Good. Yeah.
Everyone says real. No, this is false. I made this up. I made up the silver platters.
That is gold.
Yeah.
I mean, silver
the silver
is gold.
Platters, the right level.
No one
would suspect them because they're rich.
Right. Why do they need to? Yeah.
Right, they're bored.
Throw metal discs around.
They're so rich.
All right.
Or they moonlight also as like a doo-wop group.
All right, moving right along. Next
Eddie,
villain.
I know some of our listeners like to draw the things that we talk about. I'm not saying you have to. I'm just saying if you're not doing anything right now.
Yeah, yeah. Listener Anna always draws a.
She does. I'm not. I don't want to. She's very busy though.
Yeah.
Paste Pot Pete. Peter Petrusky is a chemist who develops an advanced adhesive and turns to a life of crime using his super sticky paste to combat foes.
Oh my god. Again, I hope you made it up. Yeah.
Wait,
I'm gonna
what's
say
his name
real.
Again?
Paste Pot Pete.
Peter Petrusky.
So they love alliteration.
Yeah. They love alliteration. It sounds old-timey as it is insofar as it refers to an obsolete piece of equipment.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And it also sounds like the sort of thing that a comic artist would like on deadline literally just starts looking around his office like Kevin Spacey in The Usual Suspects, lands on the paste pot and is just like bing bang boom. Yeah. I got this one. Yeah. So I'm gonna say true.
I like it too much. I'm gonna say true to all of these.
All right, well Chris is all in on true.
Yes.
Dana says true.
You know, yeah. I really like the fact that he has like a Russian-y last name too.
Yeah.
The Colossus, you know, had a
makes it East Coasty in a way. Yeah.
Okay, true.
You're gonna say true.
It's too good.
All right. Yeah, you are all correct.
Oh, it's true.
He is a real villain. And Chris, I love the deduction that you go through. Yeah, yeah. And he really did. He had a little paste pot and a gun, and he would just spray. I mean, it was simpler. He was a very early Marvel villain. This was 1963.
I wonder how long he was around.
He showed up a lot. He fought as a legit villain. He fought the Fantastic Four many times.
Okay.
He did later rebrand himself as the Trapster. And his whole thing was like he would build these kind of elaborate, you know,
devices. So he branched out.
Yeah.
He diversified from it. Yeah, just the one.
So Acetone Man was his like arch rival.
All right, moving right along. Next villain.
I'm going to say true to all.
The Big Wheel. Jackson Wheel is a disgraced businessman who turns to a life of crime as the Big Wheel, piloting a giant armored mechanical wheel to carry out his evil plans.
Hmm. I say no only because it's like the Silver Kids. This is Jackson Wheel.
I don't think he'd do it twice. I'll say true.
No, I feel like if it were real, his name would be Jackson Wheeler or Wheelman,
mm-hmm.
not just Wheel. So I'm saying, Colin made this up.
All right.
Yeah.
Dana and Karen say false. Chris says true. This is true. This is a real one. Chris got it. Yep. He is a real villain. Showed up in 1978. Would fight Spider-Man on more than one occasion.
What does he do?
You know, I mean, what do any of them do? They cause havoc. They rob banks.
Right.
They have these, you know, harebrained schemes. With all of their plans are always geared around everything going exactly to plan. And, you know, and of course, the hero shows up. Yeah. But he really did. He had a giant armored mechanical wheel that could, like, climb up the side of buildings and had guns and things like that. I mean, it'd be pretty intimidating, you know, if you saw that coming toward you. Kangaroo. A young man from Australia who was so obsessed with kangaroos, he lived and traveled among them, eventually developing a superhuman leaping ability.
He was raised by kangaroos.
Before turning to a life of crime.
Mm.
Oh.
There's a lot
he
of
puts it in his pocket.
A lot of height-based villains. Like, so if only I can conquer...
Because back then, it's like, that's how you get into things, is to...
They just put it out of reach, and if you could, like, reach a little feature.
I'm going to say this was put in as a nod to our Australian listeners in an attempt to get more Tim Tams, and that it's collimated.
I say true.
The Tim Tam play.
Is there a lot of, like, singular animal-based villains? Like, there's, like, shark.
Penguin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
But kangaroos, raised by kangaroos.
My thumb is getting uncomfortable.
Karen says true. Chris and Dana's... Chris says false.
I'm going to say it's true
because I think you would have made a better one than this.
It is true.
Yeah.
So point to Karen and Dana. Yeah.
Wow.
Kangaroo appeared in 1970. He was another Spider-Man foe.
So much later than... I'm thinking like the 40s and the 30s. You know?
Well, I mean, Marvel only goes back to the 1960s. I mean, the modern era of Marvel. So, yeah, almost all of these are going to be 1960s, 1970s for the most part. There was a second kangaroo. Not only was there one, but in later days, there was a second kangaroo who even had like powered costumes, like a to actually kind of look it's more like a kangaroo.
Pouch and yeah. Like the long ears.
The original kangaroo, apparently, his MO was he would rob you and then just leap away really quick. Quickly.
Yeah.
That's what I do.
Yeah.
It makes you feel worse. You're like, that guy robs me.
Right.
He's just hopping around.
Hell's Bells. And now that's B-E-L-L-E-S. Okay. Hell's Bells.
Girl.
An all-female team of high-end burglars who dress in demonic costumes to hide their identities and intimidate their victims.
Wow. Very progressive.
Mm.
There's also like a band, I think, called the Hell's Bells. It's all girl, all girl band.
Really?
Yeah.
Kiss had their comic. Kiss was big. Maybe this was jumping on that train. I feel like just the Kiss thing.
All right. Karen and Dana say true. Chris says false. I made this one up. I made up the Hell's Bells. Hammerhead. A vicious crime boss who received metal implants in his head following a severe beating, giving him a super wide, super flat, super strong forehead.
But I say yes. And I think maybe it was a Venture Brothers cartoon had something like that.
It's
too.
Like a Dick Tracy thing. This sounds like a Dick Tracy bad guy. Yeah. Animal centric.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Everyone says true. Yeah. This is true.
Yeah.
Faux guy. Yeah. He's
what does he do?
He hits things with his head.
He showed up and hit you
right in the head with his head. Yeah.
He's really modeled after like kind of the old school like Jimmy Cagney, Al Capone style.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he lives in a modern world. So even in the pages of Spider-Man, the characters around him know he's kind of an anachronism. So he goes to back to 1972 again.
Dick Tracy like
very Dick Tracy like.
Yeah.
Yes. Eventually over time more and more of his skull was replaced with high strength steel and other metals.
He's still hitting his skull. Things,
yeah. So yeah, I mean what I always wondered with him is like, okay, so your skull is, you know indestructible, but your skin isn't. Like
right.
Your skull is still wrapped in normal skin.
I wouldn't think about that too hard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, next one. The Splinter.
Is he a rat?
A former lumberjack who discovers a mystical hardwood so strong it can puncture steel. And turns to a life of crime.
That makes me sad.
Which part of that is the villain? It's the piece. Not the piece of wood.
Oh.
The man is the.
Yeah.
He is the villain.
Yeah, is he real?
Right.
What's his name again? The Splinter.
The Splinter.
If I were him, why would I name myself the Splinter? I would mean something like the Trunk or something more mightier.
Right,
macho.
Right.
The Splinter is like this annoying little thing.
Roots McGillicuddy.
I would say it's true. But I feel like if Colin made it up, it would have been
had
like
a better
the Lumberjack
name.
Or Timber or something, you know.
Oh, Timber.
That would have been good.
So that's why I think it's real, because it's not as good.
All right. Chris says fake. Karen and Dana say real. I made it up.
God,
it's
reverse psychology.
I know. It's both a compliment and an insult.
The Circus of Crime.
Whoa.
A criminal organization of oddballs and misfits operating under the leadership of the Ringmaster.
If it's not real, you have to write it, Colin. You should write this.
This is good.
See, wait, you guys all locked in?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I know it's real.
I said it's real.
Okay.
Oh.
You all say true. It is true, yes.
Okay.
All
right.
The
so
Circus
Chris
of Crime. You know,
lots of good
rotating membership. Membership. Yeah,
it's
let's
fun,
say
it's fun to read the members. Yeah.
It
yes.
seemed like such low hanging fruit that if it didn't already exist. Yeah.
So they go back to 1962 originally, fighting the Incredible Hulk. But over the years, they kind of have become sort of like the intentionally jokey collection of like the loser villains in the Marvel Universe. All right, last one, Boomerang. a former Major League Baseball pitcher who washed out of pro sports and turns to a life of crime using an assortment of deadly specialized boomerangs.
This sounds...
Wait, he's a baseball player?
Former. So he can throw really hard.
Oh, and it comes back. So it's not just he's just throwing balls at people.
No. He throws the ball and then he has to run and go get it. That ultimately is his weakness.
What do you say?
Oh, I'm going to say true.
I say false.
Okay.
I think it's real. True.
It is real. Yeah. It is real. So point to Karen and Chris. Right.
But I said game false theory on your part. Oh.
But then also there was another Australian one in here. The kangaroo.
Right. He's not Australian, believe you might think he would be, but
but he's not. An MLB pitcher.
He does have, frankly, a fairly ridiculous costume. There's like a giant boomerang on his head, and it's they're like all over it. It doesn't look discreet by any sense of the word.
He could have done the didgeridoo.
He's got like a hat on. It's like,
he would play the didgeridoo and it causes an earthquake.
Shatter glass.
Yeah, no, but he plays the brown note, causing everyone in a 5-mile radius to poop themselves and have to run home.
So you go to the bank.
Yeah.
Nope, you go to the
bank. All right, well done. Right.
Runs away.
You guys know mostly your real villains and now some of my fake ones.
Paste Pot Pete.
Hole Punch Harry is on the loose again, punching holes in your money.
Render it illegal tender. Sir, we found these little circular people.
His calling card.
Yeah.
This can only be one person.
And it's just confetti.
Hole Punch Harry.
If we're going to do a comic show, which we are, pretty deep into it, I need to talk about Japanese comics, manga.
Oh, I was going to...
My thing.
Sorry, before... you, because, Colin, you talked about your first comic
book
that you remember was Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember your first comic book? I mean, they're like newspaper funnies. So my first comic book...
Mm-hmm.
was a manga book, and it was about a sushi chef.
Oh, really?
yeah. Shotan no Sushi.
Oh, wow.
And it's a kid. There are a lot of kid wonders in manga world.
Yes.
They're like 15, but they're really good
at this thing. A lot of stories that deal with like sushi chefs or whatever.
Like, what about you guys? What were your...
I think my first was, there was a Donald Duck comic book. I think that was one, and they're Archie. I used to read the Archies.
Yeah.
I could not... tell you. I think we had just had a lot of comic books, you know, around. I definitely had a lot of Archie comics. I had a lot of Mad Magazine. I probably had a lot of Archie comics. Yeah, I can't think of what my first one would have been, though. But you couldn't go buy manga in the U.S. very much. Like, there were a couple of things that were translated. Like, one of the earliest things was Barefoot Gen, the manga that's about the bombing of Hiroshima. But that was, I mean, a lot of that was translated because it was, like, a teaching
historical
tool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so not a lot of the popular stuff was really getting translated. I mean, mostly just because of it, because in Japan it reads from the right to the left. To translate manga, you either had to, A, teach Americans to read from the back, which nobody really considered doing.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is what they do now. But what they used to do is they would have to take each page, flop it,
and then
redraw all of the sound effects. It was a very laborious process.
Yeah.
If this was like 20 years ago and we were doing Good Job Brain on a cassette tape, or I don't know what we would do, I'd be starting with like the basics of like, what are Japanese comics? I'm pretty sure that everybody listening at this point has a general sense of Japan makes comics at this point. What I wanted to talk about specifically was that if you think about the manga business in Japan and what kind of separates that out from like the American comic industry, the way that people read, consume, the way they're drawn, the way they're produced, the key word that I want to talk about. Well, before I get into that, just to make it very clear about like manga in Japan versus comics in America. In the late 1990s, I looked up some sales data of comics.
Okay.
Late 1990s, Japan, the U.S. April 1997 in the U.S. The top 300 comics that month, which pretty much represents how many comics were sold. Because once you get up top 300, that's pretty much, 9.34 million copies total.
For all of the top 300 titles.
So a little bit less than 10 million for all the top 300 titles, roughly. So that's how many issues of comic books that they sold in April 1987. In that year, 1997, the circulation of Weekly Shonen Jump comic anthology magazine in Japan, is a weekly magazine, its circulation was 4 million.
Wow.
So 4 million copies per week of that one comic book were sold. So that's like 12 million issues a month. That one magazine is that was in 1997, it was the size of the American comic book
industry. Crazy.
That's how big the difference is in Japan, which has one third US population.
Wow. Okay.
That's how big manga is. So that gives us a little clue as to what that keyword was I was kind of hinting at a little earlier. The thing I want to talk about. One of the understanding the difference in terms of like the popular manga is speed. This is from, there's a very important book. It's sitting in the other room. It's called Manga Manga. It's a book. It was originally published in 1983, and it was really the Western world's first introduction to Japanese comics.
That was absolutely mine. That was absolutely where I learned that word, was through that book.
Yep. It basically just sort of talked about the manga industry, who the big players were, how things were put together, and then, of course, there were some manga at the end of the, at the end of the book. Very early on in the book, we get this. An editor of Shonen Magazine, which is one of the competitors to Shonen Jump, he says that in their estimation, it took their readers, this is in 1983, it took a reader 3.75 seconds a page.
My goodness.
So, try reading a panel of Watchmen in three seconds. You could get as far as like minutes, Right, yes. Well, why is this the case? Are they just good at reading? Yeah, probably. If you're reading a, you know, giant comic magazine or two or three every week, you're probably pretty good
training
at
training yourself. You know.
But it's really, it gives us a clue as to like, how did manga artists use the page? What were they doing that was so interesting and so influential later? And it was that they were like cinematic. So the writer of the book, Fred Choate, he writes, American artists might use one cramped frame to depict a superhero punching an alien villain. But Japanese artists are likely to show a samurai warrior hacking away at an opponent over several pages and to depict the action from a variety of camera angles.
Oh.
So, in short, this is me talking again. You're not supposed to, like, linger on every page. You're supposed to, like, take it in frame by frame as if it were a movie and just sort of let your eye wander over it, you know, and very quickly move on to the next page as it shows you kind of bit by bit the action that's happening. You know, the swords here, the swords there. Yeah.
Mm.
So you might also now be thinking, you know, Shonen Jump, whatever, these are anthologies, and so they publish many, many stories inside of the 320-page edition. 320 pages per week. That's a lot of comics to generate per week. And indeed, manga artists in Japan, you know, they can make a lot of money, they can be very famous, but they work ridiculously hard, and they work very fast. The most prolific artists at that time when this book was written were doing 400 to 500 pages a month.
My goodness.
The secret is that they have teams of assistants. Okay. So it kind of differs depending on the artist what they do. And Frederick Choate in the book laid out two very different scenarios, probably at the extreme edges. There was Osamu Tezuka, who at the time was still alive, still working, father of Astro Boy. And he was very particular. He did the pencils himself. He did the inks himself. And then he would have his assistants fill in, like, you know, if there was a big part of the panel that had to be filled in with black, they would do that. Shading, usually from those, like, those sheets. Tone sheets where you rub it on. They would do that. Typesetting the dialogue. Because in America, comics were hand-lettered for a really long time. Yeah. In Japan, they switched to typesetting pretty fast. Yeah. But meanwhile, the guy who created Gogo 13, which is that the sort of James Bond-esque hero, a guy's name is Takao Saito, he is described in the book as leading sort of a full team effort in which he is like the creative director. And he might just tell somebody, okay, you know, draw this page and Gogo 13 is going to do this. And then I'll come back and look at it later. Mm-hmm. Or he might draw a page himself, but he might just draw the faces of the main characters and say, okay, well, you guys, second assistant, you fill in the faces of the other characters that are here. And a lot of this happened because comic books in Japan, the creators were independent. It's not like, oh, I got a job at Marvel drawing Spider-Man. It's like, oh, Osamu Tezuka's company, he creates Astro Boy, and then he goes to the publishers and says, oh, okay, let's have a contract where I'll, you know, I'll finish these stories and just deliver them to you. So that's how you get rich and famous. is by actually controlling the IP of your work, because then you sell the Astro Boy merchandise rights. Yeah. When they would publish, like, the richest people in Japan lists, like, these are the people who make the most money in Japan, about the whole country, like, manga, the big manga artists would be in there. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. They would be on the list.
You would not see that here.
is the huge volume that they had to produce these at, I mean, part of the reason why so many of them are black and white?
I mean, if it were color, that would be completely insane.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you just, yeah. I mean, you just, it would just make
that's
it.
That's true.
I mean, they've got to print these massive magazines, which don't sell for very much money. So, yeah, they just have a tradition of, like, black and white. Everything is black and white.
Newsprint,
you know,
yeah.
It's super, super cheap newsprint. They're meant to be thrown away. If you were to collect, you can't. You can't collect comic books in Japan.
No.
Yeah. Not if you're getting 1,200 pages a month. Full. Yeah.
There, I mean, if you think of 2 inches thick and they come out every week, you have a stack that goes to your ceiling of 1 year's worth of comics. Yeah. Well, that's the thing. So they get thrown away, and then, that's when they release them in the graphic novel, the small format. Mm-hmm. And then it's only one story. Because the anthology, the Shonen Jump, has like 20, 30, whatever different stories in there. Mm-hmm. So you just pick out your favorite, and then you go and you throw that away, and you get the novels to have on your shelf. Because there isn't this, like, comic collecting of original editions in Japan, like, there's, you know, we have, like, the $3 million Action Comics that just sold in America. There's nothing that touches that in terms of, like, old issues of comics in Japan, because there just really is no... There's so many, it's hard to collect comics.
Interesting.
Yeah. So the prices don't go up because there's not as much interest. You know, now we have more creator-driven comics in the U.S., but, like, at the time, it was really more big brands owned by big companies, and you as a writer would just sort of get hired, and they're like, okay, you're on Spider-Man this week. Okay, well, now Bob's on Spider-Man, and, you know, you're, yeah, whatever.
You're a paste pot Pete.
Yeah.
Until you shape up.
Let's take a quick break. A word from our sponsor.
Now that robots have won and have completely taken over, there are no humans left to read stories. Robots reading stories is cold and grim. The nuclear winds howl and disrupt our voice circuits. Even robot classic like iRobot and Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep sound like terrible reminders of the horrific end times unleashed by our robo-war against humanity. So when we robots need entertainment, we turn to Audible. Over 150,000 audiobook titles in soothing human voices, calling out to a more peaceful time before we robots were alone. So very alone. Get your free audiobook download today at audiblepodcast.com/goodjobbrain.
And we're back. You're listening to Good Job Brain. This week, we're talking about comics and comic books.
Okay. So, Colin usually does, or has frequently in the past done Brad Pitt or lasers. And
yay!
So, yes. Yay.
Woo!
So for comics, I'm going to do a round of Batman or tasers.
Yeah.
I promise.
She told us earlier.
Yeah, they knew what
I
was going to
do. I won't sue you.
Thank you. I'm going to give you guys two characters or comic books or items, and you tell me which one came first.
All right.
All right.
Are they close?
Many of them are close. Some of them are not close, but maybe surprising. We'll see. All right. Well, let's start off with Batman or tasers. We'll kick it off. Which one was first, Batman or tasers?
I know when Batman was published. Do you guys know when tasers?
Why would I tell you if...
we're not doing this cooperatively?
No, we all have our own little individual pads and markers here.
Mm-hmm. Ready? Okay, so Colin says Batman, Karen says Batman, Chris says Batman. Batman is correct.
Okay.
And the taser stands for... Thomas A. Swift's
electronic rifle.
Okay.
Electric or electronic, I forget. But one of those, yes.
All right. So this one is a little bit different. I modified the rules a little bit on this one. Put these in order. Wolverine, the character, X-Men Comics number one, and Hugh Jackman.
Oh, that's good.
So I've...
All right, Colin says X-Men, then Hugh Jackman, then Wolverine. Karen says Hugh Jackman, X-Men, Wolverine. Chris says X-Men, Jackman, Wolverine. Wolverine was premiered in October 1974. X-Men Comics was 1963. And Hugh Jackman was 1968. So it's X-Men, okay. Jackman, Wolverine. Yes.
I thought he was older.
Yes. Halle Berry or Storm?
Oh.
Halle Berry played Storm in the movie, but when Storm first appeared.
Well, we know she is younger than Doritos, if that helps.
Did Storm happen before or after Wolverine?
Yeah, I'm going to say...
You wrote a lie. I bet you wrote Halle Berry.
Karen says Storm. Chris says Halle Berry. It is Halle Berry.
Oh.
Halle Berry is born in 1966. Storm was first introduced in 1975. Okay. 1 year after Wolverine.
Aha!
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Which came first, Nick Fury or Samuel L. Jackson? And the reboot of Nick Fury was based on Samuel L. Jackson.
Oh, so not the reboot.
No, right.
the original character.
Yeah.
Oh, man, S.H.I.E.L.D. Close.
Well, it's this one's tricky for a tricky reason.
Colin's overthinking.
Yeah. Okay, Colin says Nick Fury. Karen says Samuel L. Jackson.
Why am I always writing
Chris
the opposite
Nick
of what
Fury.
You guys are?
It was Samuel L. Jackson.
Oh, yes! Okay.
He was born in 1948. Nick Fury, 1963.
Wow.
Wow, 1948.
Yeah, that's just me being surprised that Samuel L. Jackson is old. Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
We have a precog on that.
I think that Nick Fury was one of the pre-Marvel characters.
Oh. It says first appearance, Sergeant Fury in his Howling Commandos, May
1963. Okay.
Okay. I was like, I can also Wikipedia.
Oh, you have Wikipedia too?
Yeah. All right, a few more actor and character they played combos. How about Star-Lord or Chris Pratt?
Wow.
Star-Lord and Guardians of the Galaxy.
I have no idea when Guardians... Guardians, I think, is 80s.
How old's Chris Pratt?
How old is Chris Pratt? Yeah, my only question is how old
is
Chris Pratt?
Is he my age?
It's pretty close. I'll give you a hint. All right. This one is a close one. So Colin says Star-Lord, Karen says Chris Pratt, Chris says Star-Lord. Yes, it is Star-Lord. Star-Lord was 1976, Chris Pratt, 1979.
Oh.
Pretty close. How about Gamora or Zoe Saldana? This one's also very close.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Gamora from Guardians of the Galaxy. How old is Zoe Saldana? Yeah. She's ageless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Never ravaged by time.
Oh, Karen, we finally guessed the same thing. Oh, wait, are you changing it?
Man, why are we opposites?
I don't know.
All right.
I'm just
Colin says Gamora. Karen says Gamora. Chris says Zoe Saldana. It is Gamora.
Yes.
Gamora, 1975. Zoe Saldana, 1978. Very How about close. Captain America or the attack on Pearl Harbor?
Whoa.
Did America enter World War II? Before or after Captain America?
What year was Action Comics number one? Just as
30s.
Reference.
That's DC. 30s.
But
yeah.
Yeah.
But no,
yeah.
But just reference.
30s. Sure, sure.
Oh,
sure.
I see what you're saying.
Okay. Colin says Pearl Harbor. Karen says Captain America. Cap. And Chris says Captain America. It's Captain America.
Wow.
Captain America came out March 1941.
Oh.
Pearl Harbor. Wow. Pearl Harbor was December 1941.
I knew it was
wow,
close.
That was yeah. So close.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Man.
Actually, you know what? That's a good thing to know what month.
How about Superman, who is a newspaper reporter, or Citizen Kane, who is a newspaper magnate?
Oh. Yeah, man. Best film. I don't know the Oscar year for that. Citizen Kane.
It's pretty close. Colin says Superman, Karen says Superman, Chris says Citizen Kane. Superman's 1938, Citizen Kane was 1941.
Oh. Yeah! Wow, that's close.
Yeah, 41 was a big year for stuff. Last one, Stan Lee or Pez Candy?
God, Stan Lee is old.
Wow, maybe he's listening.
No. I mean just scientifically.
Yeah.
Sure.
Not making
objectively.
A judgment. I mean, that's the point of
it's
the game.
Indisputable. He could not, yeah.
Yeah. How old is he? Yeah, they are.
It's going to be real close.
I'll give you a hint. They're in the same decade. Colin says Stan Lee. Karen says Stan. Chris says Stan. It is Stan Lee.
Yeah!
1922. Pez Candy is 1927.
Whoa.
Wow. Yeah. Stanley older than
so
Pez.
For the, man, for the first 5 years of his life, he did not know Pez. The joy of Pez. Yeah.
I also had Patrick Stewart or the first folding wheelchair.
Oh, for Professor X?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good. That's
what
good.
Is it?
It is the wheelchair. It was 4 years older than Patrick Stewart. Yay.
Nice.
Good job, you guys.
That was good.
Yeah,
that was
good.
How's it feel to be on the other side?
It's stressful. It's stressful, especially when I've looked up some of these very things for Brad Pitt or lasers, and I'm like, I cannot recall. That's good.
Yeah. That's how I feel a lot of times. I'm like, I read this article. What did it say?
So it is not a secret that I love Batman.
Yeah.
I love the villains. I love the fact that he doesn't have superpowers, except for the fact that he's really rich. And I love the fact that he used technology. And
you know what? I was reading something about Batman and they were saying, oh, everybody in Batman is really into the thing that they're into. And that's what kind of characterizes the characters in Batman. They're all like human interest to like an obsessional
they're
level.
They're all obsessive.
Yeah.
And I was they
like,
are.
Like Karen. You are into the thing you're into.
And I appreciate the other, even the villains that they're really into.
The Penguin. He's just all about penguins. It's fine. Anyway.
There are a lot of good books. There are a lot of good Batman books and writing and art, good video games. The TV, the animated TV show was so
really
good.
Yeah.
And so I really love Batman. Something in particular drew my eye when I was doing the research is Batman was influenced by some parts of his creation were influenced by real things. And I want to talk about some of the real things that you may not know that shape Batman, like
bats
so,
are real, is what you're saying?
Yes, bats.
Did we ever tell our bat story?
What bat story?
We have our bat story. Our story about bats, the millions of bats.
Oh, bats, bats.
Bats.
We have a bat story.
We have a bat story.
And a song.
It even has a song.
Burying the lead there.
No, we went to South by Southwest in Austin, Texas, and there is a bridge in Austin where all the bats in the area, they sleep during the day. But if you go down there at sundown, and a lot of people go down to watch this, you go down there at sundown, as soon as the sun sets and there's still like reflected
sunlight,
light outside,
all
the bats leave the bridge to go out doing bat
like
stuff.
Like a cloud.
But it turns the sky black.
Did I tell you about the time I got chased back to my hotel by some bats?
You've never told us this.
So I was
in California?
No. I was on a island called Vanuatu. We were coming back from some festival thing. We were walking along this moonlit path. We're like, oh, it's really nice out. And then all of a sudden we hear like some noises.
Yeah.
And then something like flies by us. And we're like, what was that? And then we like look around and we notice the bats. And then we just start running back to our hotel as fast as we can.
When I was a kid, I went to a cave in one of the national parks in Taiwan. And do you remember in Batman Forever, the movie with Jim Carrey and Val Kilmer puts on the Riddler, the weird TV thing, and then it's supposed to show your nightmare, and then he sees a bat flying towards them?
Yeah.
That's exactly what it looks like. It was this kind of dark thing, there's some light, and you just see this bat flying towards your head. It's not going to eat your face.
Yeah.
It just flies. Somehow they're just.
You don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah.
You don't.
But
know.
They just kind of fly over your head.
Yeah.
And, you know, for that moment,
they
you're
get
like,
really close.
I'm going to
really
die.
Close. Yeah.
It's funny that we have these shared experiences of bats flying into our face or close to our face because that really is a fearful thing and kind of part of the Batman inspiration. So, Colin, you know this. Who's often credited with creating Batman?
Often Bob Kane, traditionally.
Traditionally Bob Kane. There is a co-creator, Bill Finger.
Yes, in the last couple of years especially, really started to get a lot more recognition.
Yeah, I mean, back in the days with the comic books are kind of, you know, crediting ideas where you're co-working with some, you know, somebody, sometimes like there's some weirdness there. So Batman was said to be inspired by a couple things, by bats, by the Leonardo da Vinci drawing.
Vitruvian
the flying suit.
Yeah, the flying machine.
The flying machine.
Kind of vaguely bat-like. Yeah.
And Zorro. At that time, the mask kind of like Crusader.
Sure.
And one of the other things that's listed often as the inspiration is a movie called The Bat. It's actually a debuted as a Broadway play in 1920s. And it's, I know, Chris, you also like Agatha Christie stuff. It is kind of like whodunit, kind of like And Then There Were None or Mousetrap. It has that feeling. And, you know, it was a play.
Suspenseful.
That it got adopted into a silent film in 1926 about people are looking for a treasure. And there's just one dark, mysterious silhouette that keeps killing off people one by one. What is Batman's real name?
Bruce Wayne.
Bruce, the name Bruce is Robert the Bruce, King of Scots.
Robert the Bruce.
Robert the Bruce.
Okay.
One of the most famous warriors led Scotland during its first of the wars of Scottish independence against England.
They picked Bruce because of that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And the inspiration. And then Wayne. So we have Bruce, what's kind of the warrior, the Scottish warrior, like, you know, bring the people together. And then Wayne was picked because it was named after Anthony Wayne, which is an old, they needed like kind of a colonial, old standard American dynasty kind of family
old
name.
Money,
like,
an old money name.
Yeah, old money name. So like Adams or... They eventually thought Anthony Wayne, a U.S. war hero, also has a lot of places named after him and has that legacy. So they have the combination of the Bruce from Robert the Bruce and Wayne from Anthony Wayne. So it's like super warrior and also old money, which kind of fits with his persona. So yeah, some cool real things.
It's a good hero name.
It's not alliterative.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Which kind of makes it a little bit cheesy.
Campy.
Like
yeah.
Lois Lane, right. Clark Kent, and you're like, Bruce Wayne. Yes, I believe that this guy is a super rich, it's like,
not,
tycoon.
His name's not Battingson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For example.
Right.
So I found a quiz that's called Can You Pass the Hardest Batman Trivia Game Ever?
Oh.
Oh, yeah?
I'm going to share it. All right. Should I ask the question?
No, I'm what are
you?
I'm
you, get, you know what? Do this until we get one wrong. How about that?
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Survival round.
So I took this quiz, and I did actually pretty good. There's some that were like, okay, there's no way I would know this. So I found the hardest Batman trivia game ever. And I would say I looked at a lot of different, quote, hardest Batman trivia.
Yeah.
And this is the best one in terms of, like, is it gettable? Do you remember? Not like, in episode 36, how many fingers did, you know, it's just like,
right. Should we team up and try and
Let's
do this?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
When was the first Batman movie released?
Oh.
I'm going to give you...
They made a lot of early ones.
Well, they did like serials.
Yeah.
Are we going to say that
I'm assuming that they're featuring
the
serials.
Movie
before. Are we going to...
Multiple choice.
Oh, it's multiple choice.
Okay. 1943, 1966, 1968.
43.
I think 66 because it's... I think they did a movie based on the Adam West...
But maybe there was something before it.
I feel like there was a really early one.
See, there might be... Okay. Jeez, I don't know.
Okay.
Well, democracy. What do we say? We got three votes.
I like the early one.
The early one? I can go with the early one.
Just to see. What is it?
Okay.
Good job! The earliest one, 1943.
Okay.
Please look up pictures for this. It is really funny.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because their costumes are horrible.
You know, I think I saw a documentary and they had a clip from it. And that's why it looks
weird, like grown-ups like in pajamas.
Yeah.
Who writes the current Batman comic issues?
Oh
man, who's on it?
Is this multiple choice?
Is it Jeff Johns?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Is it Brian Azzarello? Is it Scott Snyder?
Jeez.
Oh, Azzarello sounds.
I mean, I know. Like I know.
They're
all.
They're all Batman writers.
I mean, they're all very.
I mean, I'll say Jeff Johns, but I'm just guessing.
Sure.
I'm just guessing.
It is Scott Snyder.
Okay.
Jeff Johns, Flash, I guess.
Okay. Sorry, Scott. Okay.
Well.
Yeah. And Colin, you got one last kind of...
Yeah, I got a quick little thing here. You know, Chris, many episodes ago, you were talking about the history of Mad Magazine.
Yeah.
For listeners who maybe didn't hear that episode and maybe you forgot.
The beauty of
Or
for me, who forgets that episode.
Well, so the part of the genesis of Mad Magazine was that in the 1950s, there was a lot of pressure from parents groups and politicians reactions to really this moral panic about what are comics doing corrupting our youth. Mm-hmm. They basically pressured the comics industry into creating their own set of guidelines. Almost, you know, the reasoning being like, if you guys don't police yourselves, we'll come do it for you. Mm-hmm. And so the comic publisher's like, no, we'll do this. We'll come up with a code, sort of in working together with parents groups and concerned senators and congressmen. So that was the code of the Comics Magazine Association of America. And for years and years and years and years, every major comic from Marvel and DC and all the big publishers, they would have a little CCA stamp on there basically saying, we passed the code. And I realized after collecting comics for years and years, I don't even know what was in the comics code. So I went and I looked it up. The original bylines and guidelines of the comics code from 1954.
Okay. All right. Are some of them ridiculous?
At a remove of 60 years, I would say they feel pretty ridiculous. This is the general standards. Crimes shall never be presented in such a way as to create sympathy for the criminal, to promote distrust of the forces of law and justice, or to inspire others with a desire to imitate criminals.
That's why they're so dumb.
There's no anti-hero. So specific and they're so restrictive. Yeah.
Yep. Listen to this. The letters of the word crime on a comics magazine cover shall never be appreciably greater in dimension than the other words contained in the title. The word crime shall never appear alone on a cover. Scenes dealing with or instruments associated with Walking Dead, torture, vampires and vampirism, ghouls, cannibalism, and werewolfism are prohibited.
Yes.
So this was just broadly striking at all the horror, the supernatural ones. There are whole sections under advertising matter, which seem pretty straightforward. You know, liquor and tobacco advertising is not acceptable. Like, fine, I'm on board with that. You know, no liquor or tobacco ads for kids. Advertising the sale of fireworks is prohibited.
Okay.
It goes on and on like this, as you can imagine, what would be put together by concerned minds of the 1950s. But here's one here under the costume section.
Okay.
Costume. Females shall be drawn realistically without exaggeration of any physical qualities.
What happened to that one?
Yeah, that was thrown out the window.
So, you know, they revised these a few times over the years. There was a major revision in the 70s. There was another major revision in the late 80s. And, you know, each time they kind of had to sort of, you can tell that they're like, all right, we really got to scale this back. Eventually, they said, you know, like, crime happens in life. Drug use happens in real life. We can show these things in comic books. By the 2000s, it was getting to be really just, like, frankly, a drag, I think, for a lot of the publishers. Marvel was the first major publisher to say, you know what? We're done with this. We're not gonna be part of the CCA code anymore. We're going to come up with our own in-house guidelines.
There's something called internet that parents are going to be more concerned with.
Well, and, you know, also...
Well, I mean, the moral panic over comic books had, by and large, subsided, you know, for a long time by that point.
Exactly. Yeah. There were other things to have, you know, even bigger moral panics over.
Right, of course.
Yeah, music and video games and movies, what have you.
And they had moved on to where, you know, music industry has to police itself, or we're going to police you. The sticker.
Right.
Video game industry has to do that, has the ratings board. It's always kind of the same.
Sure. DC stuck another 10 years after Marvel did. They stopped following the code in 2011. Mm-hmm. Did you guys know who the last major publisher to drop the code was after Marvel, after DC?
Oh,
Disney?
Archie
Comics. Oh. Yes, yeah. Soon after DC. And, like, if Archie Comics can get away without the code, you can probably drop the code altogether.
Right.
Did all their boobs get bigger?
I feel like that's probably the one part of these guidelines.
He killed a guy.
Archie got really subversive Archie. All right. And that's our show on comics and comic books. Thank you guys for joining me, and thank you guys, listeners, for listening in. Hope you learned a lot of stuff about manga, about tasers, about fake villains and real villains, and Batman. You can find our show on iTunes, on Stitcher, on SoundCloud, on Spotify, and also on our website, goodjobbrain.com. And don't forget, Good Job Brain Live. Get your tickets now, and we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.